It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
We're starting things off today with one heck of a hunting opportunity brought to my attention by my friends in the Washington chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and the First Hunt Foundation are offering a free youth hunt camp from August 26th through the 29th, followed by a mentored hunt to help each kid tag out on their first deer in September. The Chris Christensen Memorial Hunt is open to the first 12 eligible kids who apply, and as of the end of July, there were still 7 slots available. During the all-inclusive camp, youth hunters will learn the basics needed to become a deer hunter, and then come September, they'll actually get the chance to go out with a certified mentor who will help them bag their first deer. It's going to be a doe, not a buck, but still, it'll be their first deer. If you have a kid who would like to take advantage of this, contact Aaron Garcia at the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. His email address is aaron.garcia@dfw.wa.gov. That's aaron.garcia@dfw.wa.gov. I'll repeat that one more time. aaron.garcia@dfw.wa.gov for a free youth hunting camp and mentored deer hunt. This week on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we'll be talking to another friend of ours from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. That would be Greg Olson with the Oregon chapter of this great organization. He's going to tell you about an effort by their organization and others to purchase over 15,000 acres of land along the Minim River in northeast Oregon's Wallowa and Union counties to preserve it for wildlife and to open it up permanently for public use. Staying in Oregon, that Rogue River Salmon Derby in Gold Beach is coming up really soon, August 11th through the 14th. So we're going to reach out to Mary Duncan, who has been fishing the mouth of the Rogue, and find out exactly how the fishing is for the big Chinook salmon that congregate there this time of year. Bob Loomis is back for an extended Max Minute to talk summer walleye fishing, which can be tough when the weather is hot. In addition to this, bear hunting season opened up on the 1st in both Oregon and Washington, opens up the 15th in California and portions of Wyoming. This year, hunters are going to have to contend with a triple whammy of heat, drought, and wildfires that have closed access to lots of traditional bear hunting areas. So, what's a hunter to do? Don't worry, we'll cover all three of these issues with our resident bear hunting expert, outdoors writer Troy Rodakowski. If you're a bear hunter or want to be a bear hunter, this is a conversation you won't want to miss. Want more? Okay, we'll give you another Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week, too. If you haven't been participating in this, I've got to ask you, what are you waiting for? Every week, one lucky person who guesses right is randomly drawn to win a $25 gift card from America's Premier Outfitter. And besides, this is not only fun, but you might learn a few pieces of nature trivia in the process, and I'm pretty sure you're going to learn a new one this week. All right, let's get things started, and we'll do so the same way we do every week with another edition of Sportsman Spotlight.
If you want to go on a fair chase hunt for elk, deer, or bear, and it's the real McCoy, a hunt that rocks in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, then I have the outfit for you. I'm David Sparks with Sportsman Spotlight. Rockin' H Outfitters offers fully guided and self-guided hunts. As I said, all of their hunts are fair chase on a private ranch. Fully guided hunts include lodging in a very cozy log cabin at the top of the world, meaning around 9,300 feet above sea level, home-cooked meals to absolutely die for, and a 2-to-1 guide-to-hunter ratio. Self-guided hunts are available by request. The price may vary for a self-contained cabin and or trespass fees. One-on-one guided hunts and added hunting days may be arranged for an additional fee. Owner Dave Holbrook, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
During all my trips around the world that I did, I learned some good things, many good things actually, and some bad things. And it just built up inside of me, and I decided to chase my dream and be an outfitter. And I put all these good and bad things and put out the bad, did the good, and I developed my own strategy on how to treat hunters and how to treat people, a lodge type hunt, and we hunt fair chase land, and it's not a high fence operation. And that's how I hunted. I hunted fair chase land out in the bush in Africa and all over Canada and Alaska, and it just built up in me and just kind of blossomed out with my heart.
Website rockinhoutfitters.com.
David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight.
Did you hear that? That's the sound of great careers in agriculture, one of which could be yours. With the number of different job boards that are online these days, it can be overwhelming trying to find out what best suits you as an individual in the ag industry. Hey, sift through the clutter and find your agricultural career on the job board focused on you, agcareers.com. AgCareers.com is the leading online job board for the agricultural, food, natural resources, and biotechnology industries. We are committed to fueling the next generation of talent in agriculture in an effort to feed the world. We understand and support the vast number and variety of careers possible in the industry, from welders and biotechnologists to agricultural teachers and software developers. The time to work in agriculture has never been better, with nearly 6,000 career opportunities available on agcareers.com. An opportunity for you is out there. Search for your future today on agcareers.com.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next stop is Northeast Oregon. There's a project underway that, if successful, is going to be a really big deal in terms of conservation. It's an effort to purchase over 15,500 acres in Wallowa in Union County and turn that into an area where you and I can recreate in and where wildlife will have some habitat to call their very own. With us here to tell you more about this is Morgan Olson. He's with the Oregon State Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Morgan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it, John.
This is called the Minim River Wildlife Area Acquisition. It's a partnership between Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the Hancock Natural Resource Group, again, to purchase over 15,500 acres, most of it in Wallowa County. Let's talk about exactly where this property is, and I guess our reference point is going to be the confluence of the Minim and Wallowa Rivers, right where the Minim store is along the Wallowa Lake Highway. Where's this property from there?
Yeah, you betcha, John. So one point of clarification, this acquisition is basically a three-legged stool and being, the agreement put together between Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, as well as Hancock Forest Management. And so this property was identified as higher and better use HBU land. Thanks to Hancock Forest Management, they, you know, recognize that this is a pretty important piece of property on this corridor system, especially for wintering wildlife. It's also very important from wildlife perspective and also a access perspective. So this property, basically starting at the town of Minim, goes south all the way to the wilderness, essentially the wilderness boundary or Forest Service boundary, butting up against the Eagle Cap Wilderness. So yeah, this area in the past, when it was owned by Boise Cascade and then Forest Cap, and then now Hancock, has been enrolled in the Access and Habitat program in the state of Oregon, and that's where funds are used from selling high-profile tags like the statewide deer and elk auction tags and raffle tags, and those funds are then basically paid to private landowners to gain access for the public to use. So, you know, this area has been open to the public in the past, and, you know, with the change in ownership in these properties, you know, this project has been attempted two previous times. I think it was back in the 60s and then another time, I believe, in the 80s, if I have my dates correct. And, you know, with what real estate prices are doing and a lot of focus on recreation, thankfully, Hancock identified this and worked with a partnership with Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and ODFW. So where BHA comes into play here with Oregon Chapter is there is some short gaps or, you know, dollar gaps that are trying to be bridged. And so RMEF, ODFW, and Hancock, wanting this deal to be completed, are trying to come up with some additional funds. And, you know, want to make sure we give credit where credit's due. You know, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation is, you know, definitely the heavy lifter here. And so the Oregon Chapter of BHA, you know, is an up-and-coming chapter, and we are growing membership across the state. You know, we are just now getting to the point where we can help do some bigger-scale projects, which, you know, we've never been able to do before. And so RMEF had reached out to other organizations, you know, such as Oregon Hunters Association, looking to fill some of those gaps. OHA, I think, is kicking in somewhere between $85,000 and $100,000, and the Oregon BHA chapter learned of this, and so we decided as a board to step up and donate $10,000. And though it's not a big, huge mark, it still helps in funding this project to make it successful and keep these lands open to the public and keep this property from being broken up into smaller parcels. You know, I think that's one thing to point out. You know, Hancock could break these parcels of land up and have multiple ownership, which would make access a nightmare and could be developed. And again, you know, thanks to those three partners, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Hancock, and ODFW, you know, they've worked out, are working on a deal to make this happen.
The purchase price I saw is over $18 million. That's what this land is worth. And again, kudos to Hancock for being a good steward of the land and being willing to sell it to ODFW so that it can be open in perpetuity for those of us who love to recreate in the backcountry. And again, this is a big win, folks, for wildlife, too. We're talking deer, we're talking elk, we're talking bear, and a whole lot of other critters who will benefit from this being protected and not destroyed in any sort of way, or developed, I might also add. Let's talk about how this land is going to be purchased. I understand it's happening in two steps. There's a $4 million purchase coming up first, and then the bulk of it occurs afterwards. Go ahead and break that down for us.
Yeah, so the first step is on the phase one acquisition, and that's basically, for easy math, let's just call it 5,000 acres. So that's designed to close on the end of this year. And then phase two is approximately 11,000 acres, and that's targeted to close at the end of 2023. The first project is a smaller half, and so I don't know the details around why the two phases. I think it has to do a lot with getting the funding, obviously. You know, the good news about this project is, you know, in the past, there's been quite a bit of opposition. One thing I do want to make a correction there, so this is still going to be an active, productive landscape, if you will. So there will still be grazing, and there will still be some timber harvest off that. And that's been really important part of the sale of, you know, taking private ownership and making it public ground. It's really important to point out that, you know, this will still be an actively managed landscape, which, if you look at some of the recent studies, that is very beneficial to both elk and deer and some of our target game species. So this will still be in production. And so yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for the clarification on that. Now, some of the funding, as you pointed out, is going to be through donations. And folks, you can donate through Oregon BHA. You can donate through the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Other, it's going to be coming from grant funding. And then there's the Pittman-Robertson Act is providing funding. Why don't you explain what that is and how sportsmen are the driving force behind that?
Yeah, so one point I'll add as far as the donations. So I know that Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Hancock, and ODFW, they are working with the Oregon Wildlife Foundation to create a method to which people can donate funds for this project. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife doesn't have a very good mode of accepting money. I mean, yes, they're good at collecting tag fees and things like that, but as far as donations for specific projects, there's really not a mechanism in the statutes and the rules to allow them to do that. So I know that Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, ODFW, have been working together with Oregon Wildlife Foundation, and they plan to do a press release once they get that figured out, but it'll likely be through the Oregon Wildlife Foundation, I think is the correct terminology. Yes, you can make some donations through BHA. You know, we'll gladly take any funds that people want to earmark for that project, and we will throw that on top of the $10,000 that the Oregon BHA chapter has committed to for that. The Pittman-Robertson Fund, so this is a tax that is placed on fishing, hunting, camping equipment, and this is a tax that, you know, you don't see on the receipt, but it's on those products. And so these funds are geared towards fish and wildlife management, and so it's a tax that, you know, we don't, as a consumer, we don't ever see, but it is happening in the background. And so these funds are collected across the nation and are earmarked and used specifically for fish and wildlife habitat type activities. And I don't have the numbers right off the top of my head, but it's, I believe, you know, it's millions and billions of dollars, and so it's a big funding mechanism, you know, across the United States to benefit fish and wildlife. One of the things to note, you know, with everybody's seeing that there's, you know, there's no ammunition and no guns on the shelf when you go to your local hardware store or gun store. You know, with there being such an increase on firearm and ammunition purchases, there's a lot of money in that Pittman-Robertson fund, if you will, to help with purchases like these. So with those record sales of outdoor gear and firearms and fishing equipment, that is really growing the purse for the Pittman-Robertson Act to help fund these types of products.
Morgan, we are out of time, but folks, this is really exciting. Again, it's the Minim River Wildlife Area Acquisition, a purchase of 15,500 acres south of the Minim General Store there in the tiny town of Minim. It will allow a county that's going to open up a whole lot of property to outdoor recreation and for wildlife to have as habitat for a long time coming. If you want to help and stay involved, check out backcountryhunters.org. That's the website for backcountry hunters and anglers. And look for the Oregon chapter. They'll be updating you on this. And also take a look at the Oregon Wildlife Foundation website and look for that press release and a mechanism to donate if you choose to do so. It's certainly a great cause. Morgan, thanks for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thank you, John.
More of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It's time for another Max Minute brought to you every week by Max Lure. With us again, Bob Loomis. Bob, welcome to the dog days of summer, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Let's talk about walleye fishing this time of year. I mean, it is hot out. I know those walleye, they're deep. What do you use and how do you go about catching these fish, whether you're fishing in the Columbia River or one of the reservoirs around the Rocky Mountain West or the Pacific Northwest that holds walleye?
Well, John, you asked a question here a few weeks ago about fishing from the springtime to the fall time and the changes that the fish go through. Obviously, you're getting warmer waters, you know, things get a little shallower, fish move, bait move. So yes, you want to fish things a little bit differently. And one of the products that I would fish late in the season for walleye, you know, when you start talking about mid-August on, is the product called the Smile Blade Spindrift Walleye. You've got a small smile blade on there for attraction and a little added movement. You've got high UV beads on there, but you've got a pill float on there also to give you a little buoyancy. So it adds to the movement in that lure along with the VMC Spindrift hook, which is basically, it's got a technical bend in it, and when you thread a nightcrawler on it, it rotates like a slow death type product.
Using leeches isn't legal in certain parts of the Northwest. It is in a few parts of the Rocky Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work as well in these slow death hooks?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, right. You can take and thread those partially on. Now, if you were fishing a leech like a live bait presentation, then no, just lip hooking it would not work. So you would want to actually thread it like you would a nightcrawler.
All right. Well, whether you're fishing leeches or fishing crawlers, break out the bottom bouncers and get ready to troll using the Smile Blade Spindrift Walleye from Max Lure. You'll get in some of those walleyes. Just go deep. You'll find them there. And oh, they are tasty too. Thanks as always, Bob.
Thanks, John.
Walleye anglers all over the Northwest are raving about the new Smile Blade Spindrift Walleye Lure made by Max Lure Company. Lance Mers is with us here to tell us more about it.
This lure is fantastic. We've got the patented Smile Blade. We've got a pill float that keeps it just off of the bottom where the fish like to bite. And that Spindrift hook is absolutely phenomenal. You could tip it with any kind of bait.
Tip it with a crawler, tip it with a leech, whatever you tip it with, it's going to catch more fish. It's the Smile Blade Spindrift Walleye Lure, only from Max Lure Company.
Go fishing. Help salmon and make money. You can do it through September 30th by catching northern pike minnow and turning them in for cash. Here's how it works. First, register at a designated station on the Columbia or Snake River. Then, go fishing. At the end of the day, turn in any pike minnow you catch 9 inches or longer and look for the ones with tags worth $500. You'll get vouchers for those pike minnow you turn in, and you mail those in for cash. Find out more at pikeminnow.org.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
He said we're right on him. Without missing a beat, you'll drop your line down to 42 feet. If you don't screw up, it won't be long. Someone in this boat's gonna sing Fish On.
Fish on, fish on.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next stop is the mouth of the Rogue River at Gold Beach. We're checking in with Mary Duncan to see how the Chinook salmon fishing is and to talk about the Rogue River Salmon Derby coming up August 11th through the 14th. Mary, great to have you back on the air.
It is fantastic to be on the air with you today, John.
So you're out with your husband. You're actually fishing right now. Any fish yet?
Well, they're jumping all around us, good sizes, and people are catching right now. So it's been a little slow this morning, but it's starting to pick up right now. So that's awesome. Got some people on the bank right now, casting out right by where we're coasting by them. And the Rogue is just beautiful today. It's cooler. The water temperatures are down, and fish are pretty happy.
Oh, I wish I was fishing with you instead of in the studio, but question for you. You know, those folks who are fishing from the bank and those folks that fish off the jetty there, what do they use to catch salmon? Are they using spoons, spinners, or what?
They use a spinner and bright colors.
Are we talking like a big blue fox spinner, like a number five?
Yeah, that'd be a good size.
All right.
You kind of have to vary it depending on, you know, where the water's at. Yeah, they're doing good right now.
Nice. And does anybody plunk for salmon out there in terms of having a pyramid weight and, you know, maybe some herring or something like that and a spin and glow? Or is it all just cast and retrieving spinners?
It's cast and retrieve for the bank people.
Okay.
And usually in the springtime is when a spin and glow might be used, but this is the wrong time for that.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's talk about what you're doing in the boat. And I have a feeling you're going to tell me something about the University of Oregon when you do.
Those have been working. So, yeah, we've got some interesting options this year. Our friends Dean and Pat Hendricks up in Florence came out with a new one called the I Don't Know. And we've yet to try it, but we're going to give it a go this weekend. And it's just, I don't know, when someone asks what you're using there. So I just thought that was hysterical.
Well, why don't you go ahead and explain what the I don't know is and what the University of Oregon lure is too, and exactly what the setup is so folks know how to catch those Chinook salmon at the Lower Rogue.
Well, you have a heavier line that goes to a spreader, and then you have a lighter, probably more invisible line, I would say, that comes down to your weight. That's a separate one off the spreader. And then you have your beads. There's we like a fluorescent green chartreuse bead, about a 4 foot leader. You're going to have a red hook. We like the Yamaguchi reds, a 3-prong hook at the bottom that's going to connect into the base of the fish. You put the single hook through their head and they kind of rotate slowly behind where the weight holds them down in the water. It works really good.
Do you use anchovies or herring down there?
Anchovies only.
Okay. Good to know.
That seems to work. And we use a spinner bait. There's a guy here that makes these killer colors that are University of Oregon. And they have a pounded back. Sometimes it's a copper pounded back. There's gold pounded backs. But generally they're the green with like a gold slash. And then they have the yellow on the bottom or on the top. They're deadly.
Well, and I'm sorry to all of you Oregon State Beavers fans. We talked about this last time we had Mary on the air. Those beaver colors, they just don't work on the Rogue. It's all about,
you know,
the ducks.
We could say that if you're throwing from the bank and you use something really bright orange, that would be a beaver color. So,
okay,
you know,
we'll go with that.
We're going to work with you.
All right. Ducks in the boat, beavers on the bank. I love it. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the Derby. Again, it's coming up really quick. It's August 11th through the 14th.
Yeah.
You buy your tickets at the Rogue Outdoor Store in Gold Beach. It's $30. Once you buy your tickets, August 11th rolls around. What happens next? Walk us through the Derby.
Well, you would do your application. We just did ours today, so we get to be number 18 and 19 in the rotation, which means nothing other than, yeah, I like that number. I'd love to be 18 again.
And we all would. Go
so
on.
You have a number that you use. That's your registration number. And when you catch a fish, because, yes, we will, you go and register it at our weigh table, which is going to be over by the south side of the Rogue at the cleaning station. Okay. So when you get to the Rogue, you just kind of introduce yourself to everybody there, and we'll show you where everything is at the Port of Gold Beach, and that's where everything's going to kind of happen for the Derby.
And what about the award ceremony and the blind bogey draw? Because, folks, this isn't the biggest fish that wins this. It is a randomly drawn weight. And I understand whichever fish is closest to that weight wins the $1,000 cash gift card prize. It's $500 cash, $500 gift certificate from the Rogue Outdoor Store. And you pay down a total of four spaces. So, again, where does all this take place and when?
We have a building really close to the port, just to the south side of the Rogue, called the Community Center. It used to be the Senior Center, and now we've upgraded to Community Center. And there'll be a dinner there starting at 3. You can buy a dinner ticket. That's where you can enter into different drawings for a raffle board that we'll have displayed there. The raffle boards are also at the Rogue Outdoor Store, and people can get a ticket, and then they put their name on the ticket and put it in for, I mean, there's an Akuma reel there. I'm probably going to stuff that box because I want that counter reel. So, anyway, it's fun. Everybody gets together, has dinner, and they draw from those tickets. And then towards the end of the dinner, we'll do the ceremony where they'll take a hat and they'll put all of the caught fish in there above 10 pounds, and they'll draw a number, and that's the winner.
Absolutely love it. Now, the proceeds for the Rogue River Salmon Derby benefit the CAF, Indian Creek Fish Hatchery. It's a volunteer-run hatchery on the Lower Rogue producing Chinook salmon. What does CAF stand for? And if you know, how many Chinook are released and how many return in a typical year?
CAF stands for Curry Anadromous Fisherman, and very generic term, but very nice. Basically, we raise approximately 90,000 fish every year. We have to tag them. We have to clip their adiposal fin, and then we release them into the Rogue. We usually have like three what we call race lanes, where we raise our hatchlings from egg all the way up to, they're about a fingerling. We released our first one a couple of weeks ago. We have two more race lanes to release. We are totally volunteer. We have to feed them all year long and then release them about this time. And that's pretty much $1,000 a month for that expense. So
wow.
We have to raise money for that, and we didn't get to last year. So
no.
This is our big deal.
It is a big deal. It's a really big deal. So on an average year, I know it fluctuates based on ocean conditions, how many of those Chinook come back?
Okay, well, the ones that we just let go, we might not see them for 7 years, but when we do, they might be 50 pounds. They just stay out in the ocean, but usually about 1,000 come back every year of our hatcheries. We kind of keep track of them. We have a snout program where you turn in your fish snout after you catch the fish, if it's a hatchery fish. And there's a little wire tag that we put in their noses. And so we're going to have a count of how many hatchery fish actually get caught here on the Rogue and other rivers up and down the coast.
Well, I absolutely love the work that you're doing to help our Chinook salmon fisheries on the south coast of Oregon. And folks, if you want to support it and have some fun, participate in the Rogue River Salmon Derby. Again, the date's August 11th through the 14th. Just go to the Rogue Outdoor Store in Gold Beach. Pick up your tickets. You can fish as much or as little as you like. You can fish from a boat. You can fish from the bank. And make sure you head to the awards ceremony on the 14th and have some dinner and see if your weight is drawn as the winning weight. You'll walk away with a nice prize if you do. Mary, good luck fishing today, and thanks for sharing this with us on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thanks so much, John, and it's just beautiful. It's like 65 today, and it just doesn't get hot here, so everybody that's broiling needs to come on down.
Shuler Productions is offering three great sportsman shows this winter in Washington, and you are invited. It all kicks off with the Tri-City Sportsman Show at the Hapo Center in Pasco, January 17th through the 19th. The Central Washington Sportsman Show is back at the Sun Dome in Yakima, February 14th through the 16th, and the Wenatchee Valley Sportsman Show returns to the Town Toyota Center, February 21st through the 23rd. With great attractions, exhibitors, seminars, and activities for the kids, these are can't-miss events for the entire family. Find out more at shulerproductions.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. The fall bear hunting season is officially open in Oregon and Washington. It's going to be opening soon in our other Northwest states. And that's why we've got our resident bear hunting expert, Troy Rodakowski, on board. He's an outdoors writer. He's based in Oregon. You can read his articles in Northwest Sportsman Magazine, the Oregon Hunters Association Magazine, and other publications, too. Troy, great to have you back on the air.
Hey, it's always great to visit with you, John. Great to be here.
So, Troy, between drought, heat, and wildfires, I think we're in for a tough bear season this year. Let's break things down one issue at a time. And I guess we need to start off with where you're going to hunt, because there's significant closures in the Northwest due to wildfire danger. That includes the entire Umatilla National Forest in Northeast Oregon and Southeast Washington, as well as all Department of Natural Resource lands in Washington east of the Cascades. And of course, you can't hunt areas where fires are actively burning. So what advice do you have for hunters who have to make an audible and change things up that can't go to where they normally go?
The biggest advice I can give bear hunters this fall is you're going to have to call around. You're going to have to see what maybe private timberlands are open. You're going to have to talk to the BLM. You're going to have to talk to Weyerhaeuser. And you're going to have to keep an eye on the updates from the National Forest and the U.S. Forest Department. Just got a letter last night from the BLM saying that they're going to try to keep lands open and non-motorized access on unimproved roads. So my best advice is if you can find private property where the landowners will let you hunt, where maybe there's orchards or berries or things like that, those are great places to look. Other than that, you're going to have to do a lot of research and a lot of homework trying to find places that you can access this fall.
All right. Now, let's get to issue number two. You and I have talked before, and I know when it comes to bear hunting, it's all about the berries, especially huckleberries growing on mid to high elevation hillsides. What other berries do bears love to eat that hunters should be looking for in terms of where to find bears?
You know, they love the huckleberries. There's some wild blueberries around. There's blackberries. Like I said earlier, a lot of these old orchards, if you can find an old abandoned orchard on some private land or adjacent to some land that you're hunting, I mean, these bears love to go into those places and grab apples and, you know, some of these old crab apple trees, pear trees, anything like that. But the wild berries this year are so early. The advice I can give hunters is get out early this year because a lot of the berries are ahead of schedule by about a month. So the sugar content's there, the berries are there. So finding those food sources is important. And I think you're going to have to find them early this year to get those bears and see them out there in those patches eating.
You know, it's funny you say that. I literally was just talking to a game biologist in Northeast Washington, Anne Marie Prince. She was saying the same thing, that with the drought this year, the huckleberries, they're going to be gone really quick, and a lot of the other berries as well. So when the berries are gone, where do you look for the bears?
This year, if you're out there a little later or you miss, you know, the peak berry season, probably you're going to want to look for swampy areas, water, creek drainages, because obviously there's not that much water. A lot of the creeks that are normally flowing around here are little swampy areas are drying up. Bears love to be in those areas because that holds a lot of insect life, amphibious life. They love to eat the greener grasses that are still alive down in some of those shaded, swampy, moist areas. So if you can find some seeps or springs or little areas that are cool with water, that would be a place I'd be setting up.
Let's talk about creeks and rivers. Those are also places that bears are attracted to, especially creeks and rivers where salmon are spawning. Now, bears, as we both know, like to eat spawning salmon, whether it's in Alaska or here in the continental U.S. in the Northwest, and it makes sense to look for them. But I've got a question. When it comes to the meat, if you are what you eat, do you really want to shoot and eat a bear subsisting on a diet of spawned out fish?
You know, I've heard that story a lot, and I think we've discussed it even in the past. Bear meat, you know, it has a lot to do with the diet, the flavor of the meat, the fat content in the meat. But there's things you can do with that meat regardless of what the flavor may be or what they may be eating. You know, sausages, pepperoni sticks, jerky, thuringer, It's still great meat. And honestly, most of the fall bears that I've encountered over the years, I love the fall bear meat because they're feeding on usually the berries and the good things like that. But if they do end up and eat dead animals or spawning fish, there's going to be a little bit different flavor, but you can always turn that meat into something really good and nutritious for your family, that's for sure.
Getting back to this year, it's been really hot this year, and caring for the meat and the heat, it's a topic we've talked about before. If you're way out in the backcountry and you've got a bear down on a hot day, what do you do to keep that meat from spoiling?
The first thing I do is get the hide off that meat. If there's water nearby or I packed in some water, I try to rinse it off. I try to put it in breathable bags and keep it cool in the shade. And obviously, you want to get it out of there as quick as possible. And if you can't, you want to hang it up in a cool place, dry place where it can breathe, because that meat's already warm from being freshly harvested. So it is in the cooling down process. But the key is get it out as quick as possible. Be prepared to bone your bear out and just take the meat out. Especially with as warm and as dry as it's been, that's the key. You just got to move quickly once you get a bear on the ground.
Any other tips for hunters during this challenging fall bear season ahead?
I think, a lot of people tend not to try to call bears. I think you can set up in a prospective area that looks good and there's a lot of bear sign. I think using, calf, elk calls, fawn in distress calls, rabbit distress calls. We've called a lot of bears in the fall, so it's really good to set up, especially if we're encountering some of the conditions we're going to have to deal with this year. I think that method is going to be a really good method to actually get some bears to poke their heads out and be curious and come and see if they can grab a little meat. So, yeah, that's what I'd like to tell people here at this point.
Great advice as always, Troy. Last question for you. What article should we be looking for from Troy Rodakowski and what magazines?
So I've got a bear hunting article coming out in Northwest Sportsman. I've also got a couple coming out in Oregon Hunter. I have currently one in American Shooting Journal, and there'll be a few more coming out in other publications. So just keep an eye out, and hopefully some of the tips in those articles will help some of the readers out this fall.
I'm sure they will, and I'm sure that the advice you just shared today will too. Troy, always appreciate having you with your great hunting advice on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me, John. It's great talking to you.
Located in the northeast corner of Oregon, Wallowa County offers a unique destination rich in natural beauty and outdoors recreation. Enjoy the clear waters of Wallowa Lake. Take a tram to the top of Mount Howard for million-dollar views. Hike or ride into the Eagle Cap Wilderness and fish or raft the Wallowa and Grand Ronde Rivers. It's all waiting for you in beautiful Wallowa County. Plan your visit today at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Go fishing, make money, help out, and have fun. That's what the Northern Pike Minnow Sport Reward Fishery is all about. From May 1st through September 30th, catch pike minnow out of the Columbia and Snake Rivers and turn them in for cash. Pike minnow eat juvenile salmon and steelhead. Each one you catch helps more juvenile fish reach the ocean. Pike minnow are worth anywhere from $5 to $8, and keep an eye out for tagged fish worth $500. Find out more at pikeminnow.org and go fishing.
Are you looking to reel in the marketing opportunity of a lifetime? Then set the hook, because we've got it right here for you. America Outdoors Radio has sponsorships available, and we offer affordable platforms to reach thousands of listeners interested in fishing, hunting, and the outdoors. Find out more by contacting John Cruz through his website at AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. That's AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com. Hurry, though. If you wait too long, the big opportunity might just get away. AmericaOutdoorsRadio.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter and has what you need as a hunter, angler, hiker, paddler, camper, and outdoors enthusiast. They also carry an extensive assortment of firearms and ammunition you simply can't find anymore at many big box stores. On top of that, their knowledgeable staff is here to help you purchase the right gear so you can get the most out of your outdoor experience. Visit your local Sportsman's Warehouse store today or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com.
Today's line of portable camp stoves from Camp Chef have come a long way from your father's propane stove, featuring matchless ignition, more cooking power, and in some cases, a built-in grill or extra burner. Look for the complete line of Mountain Series stoves at your local sporting goods store or online at campchef.com. Camp Chef, the way to cook outdoors. We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
I'm glad you're back. If you're looking for some things to do outdoors in the week ahead, I've got some suggestions. Starting off at Lewis and Clark Cavern State Park near Whitehall in Montana, it's Bat Week, the Sunday all the way through the 14th. There's going to be presentations at the park at 8 p.m. every night of the week by park rangers and bat resident experts, followed by a guided bat spotting walk. Bats, caves, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. And if you go to this, I'm pretty sure you'll learn a few things about these interesting animals and have some fun too. Speaking of caves, they're a great place to cool down in during the heat of the summer, and several of the lava tube caves at Craters of the Moon National Monument in eastern Idaho are now open for visitors to explore again, as is the visitor center and the campground at this geologically fascinating place to visit. If you do want to visit the caves, you will need a permit this year, which is free of charge. You can pick that up at the visitor center. Heading to Washington State, visitor centers remain closed at Mount Rainier National Park, but they are open at Olympic National Park. And if you haven't visited this magnificent rainforest yet, you're missing out. It's hard to say what I love best about Olympic National Park, whether it's the huge old-growth forest and lush vegetation, the remote beautiful beaches near Kalaloc, or maybe the Solduck Hot Springs. You'll be hard-pressed to get a room, cabin, or even a campsite at Olympic National Park this summer, but you can always stay in a nearby town like Port Angeles or Forks and explore this park during the day. You'll have a lot of fun if you do. Now, if you go to any of these places, you'll likely be doing some hiking. And if you're looking for quality hiking boots at a good price or hiking poles and maybe some hiking clothing to wear while you're on the trail, the place to go is your local Sportsman's Warehouse store. They've got a great selection of hiking boots and outdoors apparel along with day packs, hydro flasks, and more. So before your next hike, hit a Sportsman's Warehouse store near you or shop online anytime at sportsmans.com. And with that, it is time for your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week. This time, it's about those masked bandits, the raccoons. Here's your question. What's a group of raccoons called? It's not a pack. It's not a herd. It's an entirely different name. I don't blame you if you have to do some research on this one. I know I did, but once you have the answer, just go to our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio. If you haven't already, please like and follow that page, and then look for the post thread where we have the question and let us know the answer there. If you don't do Facebook, just go to our new and renovated website at northwesternoutdoors.com. Shoot us an email through there and let us know. What is a group of raccoons called? One lucky person who guesses right will win that $25 gift card we give away every week from America's premier outfitter, Sportsman's Warehouse. As we wrap things up, I would once again like to thank our great guests for helping us bring you a great show today. That includes our regular contributors, David Sparks with Sportsman Spotlight and Bob Loomis with Max Lure. Also, Troy Rodakowski, who's not only a great guest and expert when it comes to bear and turkey hunting, but also a very good friend. Mary Duncan, gotta thank her. She's that passionate angler and advocate for salmon on the Rogue River. And let's not forget Morgan Olson with the Oregon chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, who let us know the details about a big potential purchase of land along Northeast Oregon's Minim River in Wallowa County that will provide public access and wildlife habitat in some beautiful country forever and ever if this goes through. And with that, we've got to go. But until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.